And the laughter, it was this evil laugh that came out of Doc going, ha, ha, ha,
ha. Welcome to the Lax Goalie Rat Podcast. Every week, we'll be talking shop with lacrosse goalies, coaches, and special guests. This is the Lax Goalie Rat Podcast. Now your host, Coach Damon Wilson.
Ladies and gentlemen, goalies from around the world, welcome to the Lax Goalie Rat Podcast. I am your host, Coach Damon. This is the show 100% dedicated to the best position in sports, that is the lacrosse goalie. And of course, on this show, it is my job to track down best goalies, best coaches, best goalie minds in our sport, pick their brain and find out, how do they think about this position? What are the mindsets that they have? What are the drills that they like to do? What are the techniques? What are the things that help them have success? A couple episodes ago, we interviewed the reigning Virginia goalie, Alex Road. Great episode. In this episode, we talked with James Ireland, who was the goalie in the mid-90s for the Virginia team, took the team to the NCAA National Championship in 1994 and started out 0-for-8. In a national championship game. Unbelievable. We talk about that quite a bit, as well as many other stories that he has along the way. The Doc Daugherty stories at the end are worth listening to the entire episode. They are hilarious. James also coaches goalies still to this day, so we talk quite a bit about his philosophy and how he goes about coaching goalies. So ladies and gentlemen, please enjoy this episode with James Ireland. Before we begin this episode, I want to read a word from our sponsor, and that is my own Lacrosse Goalie Summit. The Lacrosse Goalie Summit 5 is here. I remember back in July 2020, peak quarantine, I had this idea to bring together the best lacrosse goalie coaches, meet on Zoom, share some virtual lacrosse goalie training, and thus the Lacrosse Goalie Summit was born. We are now in the fifth version of that event, and if you've attended any of the first four, you'll understand how awesome this event really is. It's the best coaches in the game. It's all of the lacrosse goalie community coming together to learn some tips, to learn some tricks, to get some inspiration. It's tons of fun, and if you want to up your lacrosse goalie game, this is the event for you. It's 100% free to attend live. You can show up to all 17 sessions, and there are some amazing ones. We've got Meg Taylor, we've got Zach Oliveri himself, we've got John Galloway, Scotty Rogers, Drake Porter. The list goes on and on. A very impressive lineup. I guarantee you're going to learn some awesome things. Guarantee you're going to walk away feeling super inspired. So sign up. It's free to attend live. And if you want, you can buy a VIP pass, which gives you access to all of the replays for life. So you can go back, watch any of the sessions again, whenever, wherever you want. That's the VIP pass. Super cheap for all of the training that you get. To sign up, go to www.goaliesummit.com. Goaliesummit.com. You'll get signed up. We start December 7th, and I'll see you there. Well, it's a pleasure to welcome to the show James Ireland, was the goalie of the University of Virginia way back in the mid-90s. So, James, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Damon.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome. It's going to be so much fun to, like you said, take a trip down memory lane and talk through kind of your career, your goalie experience. But do you remember all the way back at the beginning? Do you remember the first time you jumped into goal?
I do. Informally, it was, I'm the youngest of four, two older brothers that played and a sister who was athletically inclined. We all went to college and played sports, for one sport or another. But, I do remember when I was probably about 10 years old, it was definitely in elementary school, maybe a little younger, where there was a guy by the name of Tom Nolan, in the town of Garden City, where I grew up, that he worked for Saturday Night Live. And so he used to work at night, but he lived a block away from one of the elementary schools that I lived not too far from. And every summer he'd have this lacrosse camp. And he would literally have this old laundry barrel that you'd find at, you know, in your college or university, even your high school, where they put all their uniforms and stuff to take them to get washed. He had that filled with these old leather gloves and sticks. And the sticks had were kind of gold in nature with red marks of where you put your hands. And they had the old, you know, they were plastic, so they weren't that old to be wood, but they were very simple. If you had your own stick, you brought your own stick, but everybody got a chance to play goalie. And he had a methodology that I loved and I still use to this day in my coaching. And it would, you go 3 days a week, 2 days are learning, and the third day was game play. Mm. And he always had a high school kid or two kind of helping him coach. And so in game day, he had a point system where a goal was 1 point, an assist was 2 points, good defensive play was 2 points. And if you played goalie, a save was 3 points. So, you know, because at that age, you get a kid in the goal, you know, it's kind of hard. So you all had to kind of rotate around. And that was the first time I got into the goal. And I did it once or twice throughout the kind of the summer camp. And then I remember in the Pee Wee League that was formed, ironically, my father was the one that started the Pee Wee League in Garden City. He ran the midget football league. And so he took the same concept and just put it over to the lacrosse side. The goalie that we had at the time, because I was playing defense, couldn't make the game. And so they looked for volunteers, and I'm like, sure, I'll try. And from that day on, and that was, I think, fifth grade, I was a goalie. Did try to quit once in ninth grade, and Coach Doc Daugherty wouldn't let me. But that's maybe a story for as we get into this.
Yeah. Well, I want to hear that story. That's a good teaser. Good little teaser. I love what your coach did there in terms of making things competitive. Because I think, you know, at the youth, at the high school, at the college, like if you can turn anything into some sort of like competition or a game, like you're just naturally going to train harder and work yeah. You know, a lot more hard. And so by making goalies, you know, that's 3 points, all of a sudden, like, guess what? You're going to want kids to jump in the goal. And that's a problem that a lot of youth programs are trying to overcome. So I love what you did there.
Everybody wants to shoot and score, right? Yeah. And then nobody wants to get hit with the ball. I mean, let's face it.
We're crazy. We're the crazy ones. So when we mentioned kind of growing up in the, you know, in the 90s and learning the game in the 90s, this is probably actually late 80s for you, but there, I mean, there was, you know, no YouTube, no Instagram, no, you know, nope. No coaches out there. Like, how did you go about like learning how to make saves?
I was an athlete as a kid. There was a park system where I grew up where the guy there had all different games that he'd create and make. So you'd have to learn not only the game, but use your athleticism. So that's kind of how I developed my athleticism, if you will. And I played football and lacrosse all through high school. From learning to play, being a goalie, it was trial and error for me, more than anything else. I'd go and I'd watch like Adelphi or Hofstra. Occasionally I'd go to the national championship if I was allowed to go. The goalies that were playing at the high school level, just watching them. So I would absorb, you know, bits and pieces here and there. Tom Nolan, actually the guy who had this, he worked with me a little bit in my formidable years. You know, when I got to middle school, there was no real goalie coach. When I got to high school, there was no goalie coach, just the, you know, Doug Dwyer, who was the guy who warmed the goalies up. And now he'd warmed up a bunch of previous All-Americans. So he kind of knew what he was doing. But by no means was he a goalie at all. I only went to, and I think it was a junior in high school, I went to my first goalie camp. Other than that, it was just team camps. Right. Where occasionally, you know, you're the goalie, you have to be there because they need goalies at the camp for playing games and so forth. But it wasn't until it wasn't until I got to my sophomore year, my junior year in college, that I actually had a goalie coach. And it's one of the biggest things when I coach the youth today and I have some goalies I work with, when their parents are like, what can you do better? What can we do? I said, send them to a goalie specific camp. That's the best thing to learn from others and to know that there's other people out there that are his age or her age doing the same thing. And it's a bit of a community among the goalies.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Obviously, you know, me, Lax Goalie, right? That's what we're all about, is creating that community and giving folks like a resource to, because a lot of times coaches, you know, they'll throw a goalie into a drill, you know, like West Jenny drill, or it's, you know, dodging from the alley drill, and you're just like making saves. You're not necessarily like getting that that coaching of like, what should I work on? Or what am I looking for in this play? And that's kind of what I like to do, is give them some tips that they can like then take to when they get in those drills, they know like what they're working on. So I think that helps quite a bit. And I love to hear that you're doing the same. That's awesome.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Do you remember some of the goalies that, that you mentioned kind of going to the national championship game watching? Do you remember some of those goalies that, you know, you were watching early on?
So at Garden City, they don't do it now. And I didn't know there was even an option, but I had to play with football pants on. Mm-hmm. So Matt Palem out of Syracuse, and the Syracuse goalies always wore the football pants. So I remember watching Matt play in college at Syracuse. And I'm like, that's the guy they want me to look like, cause I'm wearing these ridiculous football pants, but the girls like me. Right. But there's no football pads in them. It's just the pants, as opposed to every other goalie wearing sweats, right? Like, why can't I just do that? So he was one that I watched playing. Quint Kesnich was another one. Ironically, one of my older brothers played football at Johns Hopkins. And when he was a freshman, he was in the same dorm as Quint. And I was in, I think it was ninth grade, and I went down for a visit. And they had this thing called hall ball, where they, you know, take a piece of tape and they'd roll it all up into a ball, and no equipment. And there was a door in either end of the hallway that was probably, you know, 15 yards apart or so. And you'd play hall ball, and you'd shoot, you know, on the other goalie or the other person. And so I went against Quint and I beat him. And that was like the biggest thing for me in the world, like beating Quint Kesnich. You know, he's the iconic goalie from Long Island, and you know, played at Hopkins, and now look at him, you know, ESPN star.
Yeah. And star of this podcast. I had him on. He was tremendous. As you can imagine, the guy talks lacrosse for a living. So I think
he's got stories out the wazoo.
Exactly. Sure. I also had Matty Palem on, and he was awesome too. And I asked him, I'm like, hey, Matty, did anyone ever give you any crap for wearing those football pants, you know, when you're at Syracuse? And he was like, you know what, Damon, we're pretty much kicking the crap out of everyone. So I don't think anyone gave me any slack.
And maybe that's why, you know, that's why my high school coach started it. You know, Dr. Hardy was like, hey, it's working.
Yeah. I love it. So how would you describe your style of goalie play? Were you kind of like, did you kind of model your game after like a Quint Kesnich, you know, like quick, athletic, not afraid to come out of the crease? Or how would you describe kind of your style?
Rough. And I use that word because I always felt neat, and it kind of, when I got to college at UVA, I saw this as well. And I'm going to catch a lot of flack for this one from my Baltimorean friends. All the guys from Long Island that played lacrosse also played football. So I always felt like we played a little rougher, tougher type of game. Whereas the kids down at the MSA at St. Paul's and Loyola and all those schools, they played, you know, a lot of them played soccer in the off season. A few did play football, but, you know, so it was much more strategic, much more ball movement, you know, a smarter game than us meatheads from Long Island ever played. And I took a lot of that style or that aggression that I had in football. And I took it onto the lacrosse field. That's the only way I knew how to play. I've been playing football since eight, you know, since I was eight. And so that always stuck with me. I always felt like I was more of a hustler than a tactician. And it served me well. I mean, look where I got, but it also pigeonholed me or handcuffed me, I'd say, from a confidence perspective. You know, we didn't have those coaches they have today that says, hey, what you're doing is the right thing. You know, there's always in the back of my mind, like, am I doing the right thing? Like, it seems to be working. So that was, you know, you couple that. And then when I got to Virginia, didn't play my first year, which was fine. Like, you got to sit down. Tommy Graninger was the starting goalie. He was a senior, had the transition year. And then in my junior year, Dom Starzha came along. Mm-hmm. And I remember, and I think I still have it around here somewhere. After my junior year, he gives out these kind of team awards or individual awards, and I got the Boomer Award. And the Boomer Award was, I put more guys on their butts than anybody else in the field. Being the kind of the quarterback of the defense and being able to see everything, I had an advantage of surprise when somebody's catching the ball over the shoulder and you know, timing it just right. And there's a guy from Maryland I knocked out of the game, you know, got up, walked to the wrong side of the field type stuff. And so I've always been that kind of an aggressor, if you will.
Yeah.
And I remember on my recruiting trip when I met Coach Adams, who recruited me for the first time, I walked in his office and he looked at me and he gave me one of these. Kind of big for a goalie, aren't you? Like, and I was 6 feet at the time, 180, 190 pounds, and the position was, Tommy Greninger was 5'7", 5'8", quick little kid. I was a bigger, more athletic guy. And I think it served me well. I was always active on every team I played. I was always very active in the clears and in the rides, which I think is a testament to any goalie out there. If you can get involved and be that extra player on the field during those plays, then it shows for your athleticism.
Yeah, I 100% agree. When you watch tape of the older goalies, like everyone's involved in the clears, everyone's involved in picking off passes. They're a lot more active. And at a certain point, a lot of goalies still do that. Don't get me wrong. But at a certain point, like that sort of fell out of favor. And I am 100% for goalies, one being active around the crease, picking off passes, winning ground balls. It just helps the defense out tremendously.
Well, look at Blaze. I mean, when he goes down the field and scores, everybody loves it, right? I mean, to a degree, I feel like a little bit of the creativity has been taken out of the game. It's, of lacrosse that it's very tactical at this point. And, I remember, and I was very much part of an era or the teams that I played with in Garden City. We were very structured. We played a zone defense at Virginia. It was very X, Y, Z. You do X, you do, and you do this and this happens. And I remember seeing an interview. Actually, I think they played it on the national or the semifinal game that we played against Syracuse and Roy Simmons and him, being interviewed and his response to a question about, what do you think when you have a player that, like a Gary Gate, that, runs and, jumps behind and does the air gate. And his response was, I was like, man, I wish that was, I had that a little bit more. And it was, and his response was, who am I to tell a kid not to be creative like that? Mm-hmm. Right. Who am I to tell him that you can't do something? If you feel you can do it, it's every kid's dream to do something like that. Right. And so, in my coaching style now, I try to, as much as you want them to kind of be part of the X's and O's, like I love the kids that show initiative by being creative and, going behind the back. Sure. You make it. We're all going to applaud. It's awesome. You don't make it. You got to go back to the wall and practice.
Yeah. Right. I love it. The other point you made there, which I love, is, there's different styles of goalie play. I'm 5'8", like I'm that smaller, quicker guy, like, needs to really use angles because I don't take up a lot of the goal. But just knowing that there's different like styles of goalies out there, gives you that boost of confidence. It's like, hey, I'm 6'3", I'm skinny as a nail. Like, who can I watch? Like, here, watch this goalie. You mentioned, I was a bigger goalie, football player, didn't really know. I didn't have the confidence. And I think that, by watching those goalies, who are built like you and who are your style, like you can get that confidence and learn quite a bit.
Yeah. You do, but there's something about having that reassurance. It's funny when I coach young kids today, and I always try to get them probably around the fifth or sixth grade, like when they're starting to think about playing, like in their little, youth league. That's when I like to get them. And the first question I ask a kid is, do you keep your eyes open and see the ball the entire time? It's the first question I ask the kid. And not every kid, but most kids go, yes. And I look at them, I go, we need to have a better relationship because there's no way you're keeping your eyes open when you're in fifth grade the entire time the ball's coming at you, right? And I'm like, you got to be honest with yourself, right? And if that's something that you want to do, because that's what you think every other goalie does, and that's great. Growing up, I never kept my eyes open the entire time. It's kind of hard to when it's coming at you 100 miles an hour and you're going, oh, please. Part of you going, please don't hit me. And the other part of you going, please hit me. Right. We're teaching kids to do something that doesn't come natural, which is step in front of a projectile.
Sure.
But being honest with yourself and what your, where your strengths and weaknesses are, I think are extremely important to understand and then work towards them. Towards overachieving them.
Yeah. Love it. The other thing I do quite a bit too is just like throw up an iPhone on a tripod and just record the kid making saves, because then you show them that and it's like, yeah, I'm keeping my eyes open during the whole save. And then they shoot and
they come in and then they explode out and it's like, oh yeah, you know what?
Maybe
I'm
not.
Maybe not. It turns out I'm not. So showing them
that goes for anything. I am stepping. Are you really?
Yep.
Take a look here.
Yeah. So kind of going back to your story, you're at a Garden City and you know, what's kind of the recruiting process like for you? Did you do it? Do you have a lot of consideration, a lot of looks, or was it UVA or nothing?
So it was interesting. So we ran, as I mentioned, we did a zone defense. So like my junior year, there were five games that I didn't have a single shot on me.
Wow. Right?
A single shot, let alone save. Like no shots. We'd have a lot of local competition of high schools that were just kind of starting. And it was like, I'm back there twiddling my thumbs, which I also think kind of played into the fact that I was a more active goalie outside of the goal because I was bored. And I always felt like I was going to have a hard time getting recruited because who's going to see me make a save? Like who can see what I can do? And so I did some self-promotion, which anybody who will listen to this from back in the air on Long Island will remember is I took one of my dad's old cigar boxes and I cut out a shamrock. And in the middle of the stick, I spray painted this green shamrock. I'm going, last name's Ireland. I'm Italian, believe it or not, half Italian, dad was mutt, but I've got this shamrock. And so maybe people will assimilate, hey, when that guy makes this, who's the guy with the shamrock? Mm. So I had to do some kind of self-marketing, self-promotion. In New York, we had the Empire State Games, which I think is where I kind of got the biggest or broadest brush from a recruiting perspective. My oldest brother went to Brown, played lacrosse for Dom, also played football up there. And so we knew Dom as a family. He's from, you know, a couple towns over from us as well. So I got recruited from Brown. I actually reached out to Dave Urich at Georgetown. It was his first year as the head coach at Georgetown. They had just dumped a whole lot of money. They lured him from Hobart and his storied career there. So I reached out to him. I always felt like I was wanted to use lacrosse to improve the ability to get into a better academic school. I haven't been working this hard to go to a school that I could get in with my academics alone. My first recruiting call on the day that the coaches were allowed to call was from Coach Cottle at Loyola College. And I remember it distinctly because I was really nervous. Like I picked up the phone and we had the cordless phone. And so I ran upstairs to my parents' bedroom. My mom was sitting there. And so I sat on the bed and I was talking to him. And he opened up and he's like, James, I'd like to start the recruiting process, to have you come and take a look at Loyola College. And this came out of my mouth and I still can't believe I said it. I said, Coach, I feel like I can get into Loyola with my grades alone. And there was this pregnant pause. Like, I don't think anybody had ever said that to him before. And so he's like, okay. He's like, well, I appreciate your honesty and being upfront and da da da, and hung up the phone. And I was like, oh my God, what if nobody else calls? Like, what do I do? So it was kind of scary at the time. And then eventually Mike Caravana called. He was at UVA. He was from a town over from me. And he did the recruiting for Coach Adams when Coach Adams was there. And that's, you know, I took multiple trips down to Virginia. Wasn't quite sure if it was the right place, far from home, right? It's in the mm-hmm. South. I'd never really been off of Long Island. And I went down there and I remember my trip to Georgetown. I only took two trips because I'd gone to Brown multiple times and seen the facilities and met Dom. But I did a trip to Georgetown and a trip to Virginia. And I remember Georgetown's trip significantly because I went into the locker room. And in the locker room, they had the cement floor. They had the bench seat that was bolted to the ground, these half gray lockers, pipes running through the locker room. They were playing on the roof of the athletic center. And I'm like, okay, this is kind of what a college Division I program looks like. And then I went down to Virginia, carpet floor, big screen TV, full length lockers, individual chairs with your number on it. The girls were a lot better looking too. And I'm like, man, if this is how they treat their athletes, I know I'm going to have a good experience here. And so and the financial consideration. I mean, Georgetown was, even if I got full scholarship, it would have been really expensive. I remember sitting at a at a player's house and going apartment and going, oh, what do you guys pay for this? I'm like, oh, $700. I'm like, oh, there's three of you. And like, no, 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 700 each. I'm like, yeah, this isn't going to work. I'm the youngest of four. Like,
I love it. I love it. So yeah, great, great story. So you get there and, I mean, you got a great team, right? I mean, you kind of talk about the teams over the years, but you had, you know, including yourself, I mean, all Americans did like Doug Knight and Whiteley and just some phenomenal players. What were the practices like? Like, what did you finally get some like, you know, raw instruction and how did your goalie game change?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So when I first got there, Virginia had always had a reputation of being on just the edge of getting to the next level of getting to the national championship, right? They were always in the show, but not the show, right? And that was under Coach Adams. And Coach Adams was there for 2 years. And I played with some great players like Garth Apelt, Andy Krause, and these guys were kind of legends, you know, to me, kind of, you know, in high school watching them play. And then Coach, and the practices under Coach Adams were 2 hours long. They were a bit laborious. When Coach Starzha came in, it was very apparent. He said, if we have to practice for more than an hour and a half, we're all doing something wrong. And he set a different expectation of intensity at those practices that I think he kind of maintained throughout his entire career as a coach. So it was great to have this refreshing new face coaching. From a goalie perspective, there was a gentleman by the name or a kid by the name of Nick Gannon. He was older than me, but younger than Tom Greninger. He was a goalie. He was Tom's backup before I got there. He was my backup, even though he was older. And he was kind of my grounding. Like, he'd be the one that kind of smacked me around in practice. Like, what are you doing? Like, this isn't you. And so I owe a lot of kind of my, you know, my presence and my maturity to him. But then Coach Starzha brought in Scott Giardino. And Scott was, a three-timer at Hopkins. He was behind Quint, and he was in grad school there. And man, did he bring a technician's or tactical approach to my game. And he started to in my mind, he helped me with my confidence and all the stuff that I'd been doing growing up. There was actually a rhyme behind the reason that I was doing it. I just never knew that. And so when he started to point that out to me, I'm like, okay, I get it now. Like, I'm doing the right things, that even though I didn't realize I was doing the right things. And so that helped significantly. Also in Charlottesville was another legend by the name of Rodney Rollman. And if you want, I can introduce you to him. You should definitely get him on the show. He's still playing.
He's a friend of the program. Big friend of the program. I've had him on the show. He's presented at some of my events. That guy's a legend.
Yeah. He's a Garden City graduate. Yeah. So we went to the same high school. Matter of fact, when I was in high school and I was getting recruited, Dr. Artie goes, oh, you're going to be the next Rodney Rollman. I said, who's that? And he said, get away from me until you figure it out. And so when I was at Virginia, Rodney was never part of the program while I was there. But he and I would regularly go and have breakfast or lunch. And he helped me significantly with the mind game, of the mindset of being a goalie. And so I had the best of both worlds. I had him helping me with the mindset and all the crazy stuff that goes through our minds and self-doubt and self-confidence and creating scenarios about being a goalie. And then I had this technician that worked with me day in and day out. And so I felt like I had the best of both worlds in these two guys that were totally two different players, kind of not contradicting each other whatsoever, but helping me kind of become who I was and define what kind of a goalie I really wanted to be.
Yeah, that's awesome. I want to dig into that a little bit if we could. So you mentioned, you know, you kind of for the first time in a while understood, you know, the rhyme behind the reason. What does that mean specifically? Does that mean like you kind of knew I need to take a step to the shot, but I don't really know why I'm doing it? Am I on the right track there? What's
yeah. Yeah. I mean, every kid growing up, whether you have a goalie coach or if it's a dad, you know, everybody knows you got to step to the ball, take away the ankle. Right. Mm-hmm. So like you kind of understood that, you know, and in high school when you took like physics, you kind of understand what the whole math behind it. But there were other things that I would do that would translate or Scott would kind of translate and was like, this is, you did this and this is great. I'm like, well, I'd normally do that. And like, he's like, I know. And that's what makes you a great goalie. So you're doing it just because you're athletically and over the time you've self-taught yourself that. You know, and then again, and Rodney's always been a trip and a good friend of mine throughout the years. We've collaborated on goalies. I'll send him a goalie here and there, want him to get some evaluation. And I play with his son even now on tournament teams. But yeah, that there are definitely things that in my mind, like, why do we do this? One in particular, when the ball is behind the goal, right? There's different ways of teaching that. Mm-hmm. And so the one that I finally adopted that I still use today is I play opposite. So if the guy, if you're looking at the goal and the guy's, back right, I'm facing with a big part of the cage on my left-hand side open. Mm-hmm. Right. And, so I kind of adopted that. And then, Scotty was like, do you know why you do that? I'm like, no. And he's like, this is why. When the guy passes it up the lane, you take one step and turn, you're right there. Deterring the back, you're deterring the backside pass. So it's like things like that where I'm like, okay. I'm like, this works. This makes sense.
Yeah.
And so when I coach my goalies today, I'm like, I always give them the reason why. Because I find that kids, if you don't tell them the reason why, then they kind of look at you with like kind of the puppy dog with a chew toy, like, huh? Like, he wants me to do what? Like, why does he want me to do that?
All starts with the why. It all starts with the why. Absolutely. What about, so any mental game lessons that Rodney taught you? Because I'll tell you what, if you just listen to that guy talk, I mean, you're going to get fired up about lacrosse. You're going to get fired up about being a goalie. He's that passionate about this position.
Oh yeah.
I'm curious if anything comes to mind for you and just in terms of lessons he's taught.
I'll give you one example that I remember hearing a story and he solidified it. Like, so he's playing at Virginia, guy comes down, takes a shot, Rodney makes the save. Everybody breaks out. Rodney throws the ball back to the guy who took the shot. It was like, bring it. Right? And the guy came down, shot, Rodney made the save. And so when I was in grad school, I was playing for like the little fraternity league in Charlottesville. And we're playing against, non-lacrosse players or kids that played in high school. And that same scenario happened. The kid came down who was like the stud on the other team and he shot the ball. And I was like, this is easy. And everybody broke out. And the kid's like standing there like, oh, I can't believe it. And I'm like, they whistled at him. I threw the ball at him and he goes, he came and went bang and a nice kick save. And I remember walking off the field and some kid from the other team's like, this isn't going to work. Like that guy just oozes confidence. Right. And so it's like just fun stuff like that, yeah. That I picked up from Rodney.
I love that move. I never used it in a game. I did it in practice. Where you make
it
a save,
throw
it back to the. It takes a lot of confidence because then if you get scored on the second time, you look like an idiot. But
yeah, totally.
All in the name of an awesome play. That's awesome. So you guys end up going to. Talked a little bit about your career there. I know '94. You guys made it all the way to the finals. Yep. Which was kind of a legendary run, including like an amazing overtime win against Syracuse in the semis.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You remember those games? I mean, I'm sure they're kind of a big moment of your life.
Yeah, they are. My wife jokes, says, your life would be different if you'd won that game. Like, but no, like you mentioned earlier, Watson and Whiteley and guys like that, Doug Knight, right? I played against those guys day in and day out. By far, I think they're still to this day the most prolific attack. The fact that they created a no diving rule for Doug Knight, mm-hmm. right? And I saw that day in and day out. He'd end up on my ankles and get the heck off my ankles, Doug. And he had this kind of penguin walk that he'd kind of walk away, kind of just laughing at me. But they made me better, right? And I do remember that run because we beat Carolina at Carolina. We were ranked fifth in the country. We beat Carolina at Carolina. Then we were playing Syracuse in the semis up in College Park. And the night before, they do the dinner for all the four teams that made it there. And there's one representative from each team that gets up there. And you know, gives an ode to the NCAA and to the tournament folks. And that year it was us, it was Princeton, it was Brown, and it was Syracuse. So I remember the kid from Syracuse, and I don't remember, I can't remember his name, but he got up there and his speech, he started off with, "It's nice to see some fresh faces here." And like, oh, we like Princeton, Brown, and us, we kind of looked at each other, and more Brown and us, because Princeton had been there multiple times in the previous years. Like, are you kidding me? Like, that takes some guts. So that was the one and only time we played against Syracuse. And I'll tell you, there's a couple of life lessons I learned from that, that game. I was 0 for 8. Eight shots, eight goals. Opening that. And that was the year that they had Dom Finn, Roy Colesley, and the laser Charlie Lockwood, right? The by far the most prolific midfield in college sports or college lacrosse at the time. Then they had Rick Beardsley on defense, among other studs. And those guys lit me up. And those guys had been lighting me up ever since high school. Because once Garden City always beat, you know, got the to the we always win the Long Island, and then we go and play the upstaters and the guys at Yorktown, which were two of those three guys. And then they'd beat us. And so they'd been a thorn in my side my entire career. And I don't know if that like subconsciously was in my mind or what, but they lit me up, and I was 0 for 8. And I got frustrated, really frustrated, and to a point where I actually got a penalty. And I had to sit in the sin bin for a minute right before the second half. And because I came out of the goal, got the ball, started running down, made a move, tripped over my own feet, dropped the ball. I got up, Syracuse guy came in front of me. I rode up his back and just decked him because I was so far out of the goal. And so I sat in the sin bin, and I remember my minute was up, and I'm like, "Coach, I'm ready." He goes, "You wait." He goes, "You calm down." Right. And I'm like, I was pissed. I'm like, "What do you mean wait?" So eventually he got me back and he got back in the game. Went into halftime, right? We're down. Come back out of halftime. Start playing a little bit better. Start digging myself out of the hole that I was in. You know, a lot of people say that I outplayed the other goalie in the second half. If you watch that game, great game to watch from start to finish. Very fast, back and forth, back and forth. But at one point, we're down by five, and it was like 11 to 6 or 12-7 or something like that. And I remember standing clear as day, my back to the scoreboard, looking over the field. And that was the first year, I think, that the championship and the semis were on like ABC or CBS, and the cameras were there. And all the Syracuse fans are in the stands, and I hear this: "Ireland, it's all your fault." And they start chanting this, and it's 20,000 strong Syracuse fans. Right. Yeah. And I just start laughing to myself, like, holy crap. Like, they're right. I'm not playing my best game. And it goes to show that the team game, I kind of dug myself out of the hole, had a couple of big saves, a couple of clears, and we just let Whiteley, Watson, and Knight do what they do best. And they peppered the other goalie, I think five straight goals. And then we went into overtime and won it. And I walked off that field on Saturday with my head down going, I got to do this again in 2 days. Mm-hmm. Right? I got to play for the national championship game against Princeton in 2 days. And my mind is just a bird's nest. And I remember walking off the field, and the associate athletic director at Virginia at the time was walking past me, and he goes, "James, nice game." And I looked at him, and I said, don't blow smoke. And he looked at me, he goes, no. He goes, "You played terribly in the first half." He goes, "To come out of the funk that you were in from the first half to play the way you did in the second half," he's like, "that takes guts." And it was just that little piece of confidence that coming out of that was like, you know what? He's right. I'm on my way up. And then we played Princeton in the final game 2 days later in overtime. We lost. But I walked off the field with my head held high going, I did everything I could possibly do. I made all the saves I should have made. And the ones that, you know, I shouldn't have made, I made a couple there. Princeton with Bill Tierney just played the best, you know, as Virginia alums, we say that was the best chess team on the lacrosse field. Mm-hmm. 'Cause they held the ball and slowed it down like you wouldn't believe. That was kind of Tierney's game. They played a possession game.
Yeah.
Whereas we were running and gunning, and then we were tired. I mean, from Saturday, I think, and the emotions of winning that game as well.
Yeah. But, I want to touch on, you know, that 0 for 8 start.
I knew you would.
Yeah. I don't want to dig in. I'm not going to get the crowd to chant Ireland. It's all your fault. But, you know, that's common for goalies. Like, I mean, that can happen, right? Yeah. It's not to say that like every goalie is going to go out in that big game, in that big semifinal game with the cameras and the 20,000 people and have that situation. But, you know, you did, and some goalies might. And like, what do you recommend to a goalie in terms of mindset or in terms of like how, you know, some physical things that they can do when they give up, you know, let's say first quarter, you don't make any save, first half, you don't make any saves. What's your thoughts when it comes to that?
So we have to compartmentalize as goalies, right? And we have to be able to feed off the positive and try to really squash the negative. You know, I was guilty of it and still am to a degree today. Like, and I had this conversation with one of the goalies I'm working with in seventh grade now. He said to me, he goes, it's hard for me to focus on the shooter when my defenseman gets beat. Right. And I said, you're absolutely right. Like, cause there's so much distraction and it's almost kind of like, oh man, he got beat and it's just me. And I'm like, you recognize it. You're recognizing it at such a young age that you can make that change, that you can start to train your mind, say, you know what? He got beat. Instead of saying, oh man, I'm the only one left. It's, man, this is my time. Mm-hmm. Right? To be able to change that mindset. And so for me, when I'm in the goal, whether it's today or back then, I always took responsibility for any goal, pretty much any goal that was scored, right? Because I always wanted my defense to play their game. I never wanted them to play scared or to be timid. Or fearful that they might get beat, like, because that's, I love watching that type of game, and I always had that, those type of defenders, and so I always take those responsibility, swallow it, let it go, right? Mm-hmm. Next up, right? Let's refocus. Let's lock on the next time. If I ever felt like I was having a hard time seeing the ball, I had an exercise I used to do during practice or during games, where instead of watching the guy catch the ball, right? Guy passes from one guy to the next. Instead of watching a one to one, I do this and I'd focus on the ball and I just keep my eyes on the ball the entire time to kind of get my mind going. That's the little white ball. That's why I'm out here, mm-hmm. right? To make sure that thing doesn't go behind me. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of an exercise I would instill. I'd sing to myself. Sounds weird, but I was always singing like Marky Mark or something like upbeat. Particularly when the ball's down the other side of the side of the cage, keeping my feet moving, keep myself into it and active. So that was always another one. And then at Virginia, the defense and I, we came up with this strategy in the fourth quarter that if we're winning by like four and there's 4 minutes left, we say, all right, we got four 1-minute games we got to win. Mm-hmm. All right, let's just win one game at a time. And so by doing that, there wasn't this huge stress of, oh my God, there's 4 minutes. Like, all right, we got 1 minute at a time.
Yep.
Right. So those were a couple of the tactics that I utilized when I played.
Yeah. I love that last one, especially about, you know, the small games. Cause that works even in blowouts too. Like if, you know, you're getting beat 10-0, like let's just win this next 2 minutes. Right. So then yeah. It keeps that competition.
Totally.
Keeps that in there. I love that. Love that. There was one other thing. No, escape me. All right. So that's awesome. I know what I was going to say. I love what you said about the mindset of, you know, like as goalies, you know, you might only need to make that one or two saves to win the game for your team, right? I mean, if you watched the national championship game this last year, like, let's be honest, those goalies did not have a great game. It was a pretty high scoring game, but at the very end, you know, that goalie makes the save, Alex Rode makes a huge save. For a walk-off win. And so like sometimes you only need to be there for that one or two, you know, one or two saves. And
you gotta be there.
You gotta be there.
You gotta be in the mindset of like, this is mine, not theirs. There's gonna be a winner. Why not be you? Right.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it. What do you do these days to train goalies? Like what's kind of your approach?
I like to get them when they're younger, for a couple of reasons. One, they're not too big for their britches, and they're sponges when it comes to absorbing. Mm-hmm. Do a lot of repetitive stuff with them, and I start from the ground up. I have a couple of sayings that I use with them. Finish the way you started, right, is a big one that I utilize. And what I mean by that, and I break it down for them, is, and I say, all right, get in your stance, and they get in their stance, and it sticks out. I say, okay, there's a couple of things, right? Look at how far your feet are apart from each other, right? That's one thing. Like when you step and you finish, we want to keep the feet that distance apart, mm-hmm. right? To keep your balance, because you got your weight over both feet. The distance between your stick and your chest, right? There's a distance there. We want to maintain that distance and keep the stick on the plane. I look at the toes, knees, and shoulders should be aligned. Heels and butt should be aligned, right? And I tell them, go into your parents' bedroom. Mom's got a long, or dad's got a long full length mirror. Go get in your position, sideways, forward, and look. And that's the position that you should be in. That's the athletic position, with knees bent, slightly leaning forward, hands out in front of you. So I always start with those basics. As I mentioned earlier, I always ask them the question of to keep their eyes open. Other than that, it's just kind of working one shot at a time. Always trying to build the confidence. Mm-hmm. Over the years, I've worked with kids, and the parents will be like, I had a couple of high schoolers that I worked with years ago that one of the dads came up and was like, you know, can you bring another shooter out here? You know, your shots, you know, my kids, we're going to go play against these kids that are shooting a lot harder than you. And so, like, I kind of took a deep breath, said, okay, so, you know, go sit over there and watch. And so I put the kid in the goal and get him warmed up. And I reel off about 10 straight into the back of the net. And I stopped and I called the dad over and I called the kid over. And this was a Friday and he was going up to play in a tournament. And I looked at the kid and I said, how do you feel right now? He goes, I feel terrible. I can't save the ball. Da da da. Like the dad, he goes, I get it. Right? Like you can, you know, any guy who can warm up a goalie can score. Right? But that's not the job of warming up a goalie. The part of warming up a goalie is to give them the ability to have the confidence and the mindset to go into the next competition on a high, as mm-hmm. opposed to them guessing, going, you know what? I worked out with my coach yesterday. I can't get the offside lows. I don't know what's wrong. Right. It's trying to get them into that mindset that they can be successful.
Yeah. That's interesting. He was trying to call out James Island for not shooting hard enough, you know, and he's like, I'll show you.
Hey, that was like 10 years ago. And I got tennis racket and tennis balls is the big thing I use, because my shoulders are shot.
Yeah.
You know, I can only shoot so many times before this little body gets needs its Advil.
There you go. I like to shoot when I'm doing drills. I sometimes like to shoot for about 70% save percentage, because I think that, like, you know, obviously if you're doing 100% save percentage, you're not shooting hard enough, right? Like it's not hard enough. But if it gets lower than that, then all of a sudden, like you said, like you're trying to build up the confidence. One of the point of the drills is not only to like improve your technique and get that muscle memory going, but it's just to build up your confidence. And I think if you get too low, you know, like you're making it too hard, then like you said, with your goalie, like, how do you feel right now? I feel like crap. I can't save anything. So it's a balance.
I think goalies need to go in anytime they strap on the helmet and do an individual workout, or even, you know, with their team. I think the thing they need to walk in is this a warm-up or is this a workout? Mm-hmm. I think there's a distinction between the two. A warm-up is just to get your body ready to go for practice, get your motor skills ready, get kind of locked in. The workout is when you're working a little bit more in depth, a little deeper, a little harder into specific areas of whatever it is that individual goalie needs to work on.
Yeah.
You know, from a technique perspective.
Yeah.
You know, growing up, you know, people always ask me, you know, how did you get the skill set that you did? I was grounded a lot as a kid. And so the only time my parents would ever let me out was being grounded was I could go down to the elementary school with a big brick wall and just work the wall. Mm-hmm. Because I spent a lot of time in my room being grounded, I love the hacky sack, right? The foot eye coordination. I did it. I don't know if you knew, I played a year in Australia after I graduated UVA, And, you know, they nicknamed me the hoof down there because I made so many feet saves. Now that's not that's not the best moniker to have as a goalie. It means you're kind of lazy. You're not getting down there. Right. But I had great, you know, foot eye coordination. And then, speed bag. I had a speed bag in my room that I used to beat up all the time. And so I think that helped with the hand quickness, you know, the body and the feet eye coordination, with the hacky sack. So I kind of did those weird things.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know any better. Like you said earlier, like there was no coach to tell me this is what you need to do. And so I'm like, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I love when those like different sports translate into, you know, into giving you skills that are applicable for goalies. For me,
oh, totally.
Growing up, I would go to the Boys and Girls Club, you know, every day all summer and play ping pong. And so I was a huge ping pong player. And I feel like that, you know, that like, it's kind of the same. It's totally. Yeah, it's the same approach. It's like you with your top hand, you're going right to the, you know, you're going right to the ball and
absolutely.
And so I think ping pong, a lot of goalies I've had on this podcast are really into ping pong. Might have a goalie ping pong tournament pretty soon.
I did a bunch of racquetball too.
Racquetball is phenomenal.
Yeah. And I, the reason why I like racquetball, one is because the ball is coming off more than squash. A lot of people say squash. I like racquetball because it doesn't just involve the ball coming at you at a fast speed, but it involves your mind of playing angles and anticipation.
Right? Yeah.
You know, I might not get it when it comes, you know, comes past me, but it's coming off a wall or two walls. Where am I going to anticipate where that ball is going to be so I can get a good shot? I always thought that was a good, you know, non-lacrosse training exercise.
Yeah, I love it. When it comes to specific goalie drills, does anything come to mind for things that you really like?
I usually work my goalies, start them off with some kind of just hand eye with the tennis balls. You know, I'm still learning, you know, from my goalies who go off to the goalie clinics or camps and come back. Hey, what'd you learn? What did you like? What did you feel was beneficial? So I'll pick things up like that. One drill I like doing, that all goalies hate is, you know, when you're working the offside low, right? A lot of times they'll bend at the waist as opposed to at the knees. And because let's face it, you do like an air chair. I mean, your quads start hurting after a while. Mm-hmm. So I'll get them into their position on an offside low, you know, shoot offside low, like on a short hop, and they'll get down there. I'll say freeze. And so they'll freeze there. And I say, okay, stay in that position and put your hands as if you're ready for the next shot. And so for the offside low, those kind of short hops, they'd have to stay in that crunched position and just all hand stuff. Mm. You know, do that for as long as they possibly can before the legs start tightening up too much. So that's one that I always employ. Another one that I like to do from a teaching perspective, and again, it relates to that offside low, is I'll start off and I'll just do the offside low shots with, you know, 20-25 balls. And at the end, inevitably for beginner goalies, those balls are either in the back of the net, a couple of them in front of them, or most likely they're in front of them, but scattered all over the place, right? They made the save, but they didn't get control over it. And then I'd walk through and I'd say, okay, see this and see how they're scattered all over the place. Let's work on getting that scatter plot down to where it's right in front of you.
Yeah.
Right. And so then we just work on that. And so it's just a small step that they can grab onto, and they can see immediate results of, hey, he taught me something that I just did and I see the results. And so one, it gains some confidence with the player coach. But it also is just working that offside low, which we all know is so important.
Yeah. Love it. Awesome. I wrote down here, you're going to tell us a good Doc Doherty story. Can we hear that?
I've got multiple. I'll tell you two. And Doc's a legend in the game. Everybody remembers Doc, always with his big chew in his mouth. But so at practice one day, I remember we're practicing, kind of there's a minute left in the game, we got to hold on to possession. And so he gives the ball to one of the midfielders. And obviously, you know, you got to keep the ball behind the goal, right? If you're going to lose the ball when you want to maintain possession to the other team, you want to do it as far away from your goal as possible. And so he gives the ball to this kid, and I'm not going to mention names. I know exactly who it is, but the kid gets the ball and he starts running. And he's just running, but not real fast. And the D-man's kind of checking him all over the place. And finally, Coach Daugherty stops and goes, so-and-so, what the hell are you doing? He's like, what do you mean? He's like, why are you doing the varsity jog? Or, you know, the varsity jog. And he goes, well, if I run slower, doesn't time go faster? And he stopped practice and called the entire team in. And he asked the player to reiterate what he just said. And he turned to me and goes, and that's why the dinosaurs are extinct. And then the other one was he always walked around with dice, right? Mm-hmm. And occasionally he'd pull the dice out to determine what kind of running we're going to do at the end of practice. And this was still back in the day where running was separate from practice, right? Today, as coaches, you're interacting, you're trying to do as many running drills as possible. The condition, it might not be as hard. And so he pulls out the dice, and there's three of them. And so he rolls one of them to determine if you're going from the end line to the restraining line and back. Right, that would be, I think it was like one. If he rolls a one or a two, that's where you're going. If it's a three or four, you go to the midfield and back. If you go to five, you go to the other restraining. If you go to six, it's a full field back and forth. Mm-hmm. Then you roll all three of them to determine how many you're doing.
Wow.
And so he brings, you know, it's a crappy day on Long Island in like the beginning of the season. And he brings out these dice, and it was one of the kids' birthdays. And he said, all right, he goes, you roll it. Boom, six.
Full field.
Boom, triple six. No. And the laughter, it was this evil laugh that came out of Doc going, you know, like, I can't lose. Get on the end line.
Wow, for 18 full-field sprints.
Oh, man, it was brutal.
That's awesome. that's awesome. Well, James, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I have a couple more questions. So I'm curious about kind of your leadership. Goalies, you know, the best lacrosse teams that I know have goalies who are leaders. You know, was that a part of your game? And, you know, how'd you go about kind of demonstrating leadership?
I think regardless if you're a goalie or any other player, it's by example. As a goalie, what I could do was, you know, always show up early and leave late, right? Those rogue things. And it wasn't until, I remember I got kind of criticized, as an upperclassman at UVA, because you have to understand, when I first got to UVA, we were kind of known as the casualiers, right? Like, we did enough to be good, but we never took that extra step to be great. Mm-hmm. And I had kind of bought into that when I first got there. And then as I got older, the time, you know, as you get older and the time gets limited, about, you know, I've got goals, you know, you want to win the national championship. I don't have 4 years anymore. I got two, and now I got one. Like, and so you become a little bit more serious as time goes on. But it's a hard thing as a goalie to lead. If they don't take ownership of when it's their responsibility. Like, mm-hmm. when a goal goes in from, you know, 15, 20 yards out, that's nobody's fault but yours. You got to own that. By building up the defense, I told the story earlier on, I always wanted to make sure my defense, you know, played their best, put it on my shoulders. I'm fine with that. You know, so those were kind of the couple of things that I would do. And I would encourage any goalie, and it's a tough thing to swallow, because let's face it, you're getting shot on by folks. And when somebody doesn't do their job, that's probably why you're getting a mm-hmm. shot. So the initial reaction is to kind of coach or course correct that individual. But as a goalie, you have to understand that's not your job. Like, that's the coach's job to do that. It's your job to be cohesive and make sure everybody's playing at the best they possibly can.
Love it. Yeah. Love it. So, well, James, I feel like we could chat for another couple hours. Maybe we'll have to come back and
do
a part two.
You're probably tired of hearing me.
No, absolutely not. I'm loving this. I should have known any Long Island goalie I get on the podcast, you got to reserve 3 hours for talking.
I've been pretty good too. I've been holding on, you know, you can't see it, but the hands haven't been moving as well.
There you go.
That's how we talk.
I love it. James, if you had to leave the goalies out there with one final piece of advice, what would that be?
The next one. Have a mindset of the next one. Goal goes in, get the next one. Make the save, get the next one. Right? Some defender gets beat, you don't make the clear, get the next one. Always think about moving forward and progressing as opposed to behind. You can't do anything with what happened. You can change or impact what's in front of you. That's my big advice.
Love it, love it. James, thank you so much.
All right, no worries.
So there you have it. Hope you enjoyed that episode with Virginia goalie James Ireland. I, of course, forgot that anytime you schedule a podcast with a Long Islander, you better book off half the day, clear half your schedule, because these guys love to talk, especially lacrosse goalies. They love to talk lacrosse goalies. And James had some amazing stories. Those Doc Doherty stories at the end are incredible. Hope you enjoyed that episode. That'll do it for this week. Remember, we got the Lacrosse Goalie Summit 5 happening December 7th through the 10th. So if you've made it this far in the podcast, you're going to love that Lacrosse Goalie Summit. That is a free ticket, free event, www.goaliesummit.com. Goaliesummit.com. Get yourself signed up. You get all the links. We got some amazing coaches, Scotty Rogers, John Galloway, Drake Porter, Meg Taylor, Jack Runkle, just a real who's who list of lacrosse goalie coaches. Maybe for the next one, we'll get James Ireland out there. That'll be fun. All right, that'll do it this week. Hope you guys are enjoying the winter lacrosse season. Get out there, get some work in, do well and be well. I'm Coach Damon. Take care.
You've been listening to the Lax Goalie Rat Podcast with your host, Coach Damon Wilson.